So we're starting chapter 35 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, called Veritaserum. Harry felt himself slam flat into the ground. His face was pressed into the grass. The smell of it filled his nostrils. He had closed his eyes while the portkey transported him, and he kept them closed now. He did not move. All the breath seemed to have been knocked out of him. His head was swimming so badly he felt as though the ground beneath him were swaying, like the deck of a ship. To hold himself steady, he tightened his hold on the two things he was still clutching, the smooth, cold handle of the Triwizard Cup and Cedric's body. He felt as though he would slide away into the blackness gathering at the edges of his brain if he let either of them go. Shock and exhaustion kept him on the ground, breathing in the smell of grass, waiting for someone to do something to happen, and all the while his scar burned dully on his forehead. A torrent of sound deafened him and confused him. There were voices everywhere, footsteps, screams. He remained where he was, his face pressed up against the noise, as though it were a nightmare that would pass. Then a pair of hands seized him roughly and turned him over. "Harry! Harry!" He opened his eyes. He was looking up at the starry sky, and Albus Dumbledore was crouched over him. The dark shadows of a crowd of people were pressed in around them, pushing nearer. Harry felt the ground beneath his head reverberating with their footsteps. He'd come back to the edge of the maze. He could see the stands rising above him, the shapes of the people moving in them, the stars above. Harry let go of the cup, but he clutched Cedric to him even more tightly. He raised his free hand and seized Dumbledore's wrist, while Dumbledore's face swam in and out of focus. "He's back," Harry whispered. "He's back, Voldemort." "What's going on? What happened?" The face of Cornelius Fudge appeared upside down over Harry. It looked white, appalled. "My God, Diggory," it whispered. "Dumbledore, he's dead." The words were repeated. The shadowy figures pressing in on them gasped it to those around them, and then others shouted it, screeched it into the night. "He's dead." Excuse me. Excuse me. Ugh. "He's dead. He's dead. Cedric Diggory, dead." Hold on one sec, Boo. Let me pause this. "Harry, let go of him," he heard Fudge's voice say, and he felt fingers trying to pry him from Cedric's limp body, but Harry wouldn't let him go. Then Dumbledore's face, which was still blurred and misted, came closer. "Harry, you can't help him now. It's over. Let go." "He wanted me to bring him back," Harry muttered. It seemed important to explain this. "He wanted me to bring him back to his parents." "That's right, Harry. Just let go now." Dumbledore bent down, and with extraordinary strength for a man so old and thin, raised Harry from the ground and set him on his feet. Harry swayed. His head was pounding. His injured leg would no longer support his weight. The crowd around them jostled, fighting to get closer, pressing darkly in on him. "What's happened? What's wrong with him?" "Diggory's dead." "He'll need to go to the hospital wing," Fudge was saying loudly. "He's ill. He's injured. Dumbledore, Diggory's parents, they're here. They're in the stands." "I'll take Harry, Dumbledore. I'll take him." "No, I would prefer." "Dumbledore, Amos Diggory's running. He's coming over. Don't you think you should tell him before he sees?" "Harry, stay here." Girls were screaming, sobbing hysterically. The scene flickered oddly before Harry's eyes. "It's all right, son, I've got you. Come on, hospital wing." "Dumbledore said stay," said Harry thickly, the pounding in his scar making him feel as though he were about to throw up. His vision was blurring worse than ever. "You need to lie down. Come on now." Someone larger and stronger than he was half pulling, half carrying him through the frightened crowd. He heard people gasping, screaming, and shouting as the man supporting him pushed a path through them, taking him back to the castle. Across the lawn, past the lake, and the Durmstrang ship, Harry heard nothing but the heavy breathing of the man helping him walk. "What happened, Harry?" the man asked at last as he lifted Harry up the stone steps. Clunk, clunk, clunk. It was Mad-Eye Moody. "Cup was a portkey," said Harry, as they crossed the entrance hall. Took me and Cedric to a graveyard, and Voldemort was there, Lord Voldemort. Clunk, 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 up the marble stairs. "The Dark Lord was there? What happened then?" "Killed Cedric. They killed Cedric." "And then?" Clunk, 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 along the corridor. "Made a potion. He got his body back." "The Dark Lord got his body back? He's returned?" "And the Death Eaters came, and then we dueled."
"You dueled with the Dark Lord?"
"Got away. My wand did something funny. I saw my mom and dad. They came out of his wand."
"In here, Harry. In here, and sit down. You'll be all right. Now drink this."
He heard a key scrape in a lock and felt a cup being pushed into his hands.
"Drink it. You'll feel better. Come on now, Harry. I need to know exactly what happened."
Moody helped tip the stuff down Harry's throat. He coughed, a peppery taste burning his throat. Moody's office came into sharper focus, and so did Moody himself. He looked as white as Fudge had looked. Both eyes were fixed unblinkingly upon Harry's face.
"Voldemort's back, Harry? You're sure he's back? How did he do it?"
"He took stuff from his father's grave, and from Wormtail, and me," said Harry. His head was clearer, his scar wasn't burning so badly, and he could now see Moody's face distinctly, even though the office was dark. He could still hear screaming and shouting from the distant Quidditch field.
"What did the Dark Lord take from you?" said Moody.
"Blood," said Harry, raising his arm. His sleeve was ripped where Wormtail's dagger had torn into it. Moody let out his breath in a long, low hiss.
"And the Death Eaters, they returned?"
"Yes," said Harry, "loads of them."
"How did he treat them?" Moody asked quietly. "Did he forgive them?"
But Harry suddenly remembered.
He should have told Dumbledore. He should have said it straight away. "There's a Death Eater at Hogwarts. There's a Death Eater here. They put my name in the Goblet of Fire. Made sure I got through to the end."
Harry tried to get up, but Moody pushed him back down. "I know who the Death Eater is," he said quietly.
"Karkaroff," said Harry wildly. "Where is he? Have you got him? Is he locked up?"
"Karkaroff," said Moody, with an odd laugh. "Karkaroff fled tonight when he felt the dark arm burn upon his arm. He betrayed too many fellow supporters of the Dark Lord to wish to meet them. But I doubt he will get far. The Dark Lord has ways of tracking his enemies."
"Karkaroff's gone? He ran away, but then he didn't put my name in the goblet?"
"No," said Moody slowly. "No, he didn't. It was I who did that."
Harry heard, but didn't believe. "No, you didn't," he said. "You didn't do that. You couldn't have done that."
"I assure you I did," said Moody. His magical eyes swung around and fixed upon the door, and Harry was making sure that no one was outside it. At the same time, Moody drew out the wand and pointed it at Harry.
"He forgave them, then," he said. "The Death Eaters who went free, the ones who escaped Azkaban."
"What?" said Harry. He was looking at the wand Moody was pointing at him. This was a bad joke. It had to be.
"I asked you," said Moody quietly, "whether he forgave the scum who never even went to look for him, those treacherous cowards who wouldn't even brave Azkaban for him, the faithless, worthless bits of filth who were brave enough to cavort in masks at the Quidditch World Cup, but fled at the sight of the Dark Mark when I fired into the sky."
"You fired? What are you talking about?"
"I told you, Harry, I told you. If there's one thing I hate more than any other, it's a Death Eater who walked free. They turned their backs on my master when he needed them most. I expected him to punish them. I expected him to torture them. Tell me he hurt them, Harry."
Moody's face was suddenly lit with an insane smile.
"Tell me he told you... told them that I alone, remained faithful, prepared to risk everything to deliver to him the one thing he wanted above all. You."
"You didn't. It can't be you."
Who put your name in the Goblet of Fire under the name of a different school? I did. Who frightened off every person I thought might try to hurt you or prevent you from winning the tournament? I did. Who nudged Hagrid into showing you the dragons? I did. Who helped you see the only way you could beat the dragon? I did. Moody's magical eye had now left the door. It was fixed upon Harry. His lopsided mouth leered more widely than ever. It hasn't been easy, Harry, guiding you with these tasks without arousing suspicion. I've had to use every ounce of cunning I possess so that my hand would not be detectable in your success. Dumbledore would have been very suspicious if you'd managed everything too easily. As long as you got into that maze, preferably with a decent head start, then I knew I would have a chance of getting rid of the other champions and leaving your way clear. But I also had to contend with their stupidity. The second task, that was the one I was most afraid we would fail. I kept watching you, Potter. I knew you hadn't worked out the egg's clue, so I had to give you another hint. You didn't, Harry said hoarsely. Cedric gave me the clue. Who told Cedric to open it underwater? I did. I trusted that he would pass the information on to you. Decent people are so easy to manipulate, Potter. I was sure Cedric would want to repay you for telling him about the dragons, and so he did. But even then, Potter, even then, you seemed likely to fail. I was watching all the time, all those hours in the library. Didn't you realize that the book you needed was in your dormitory all along? I planted it there early on, when I gave it to the Longbottom boy. Don't you remember? Magical water plants of the Mediterranean. Could have told you that all you needed to know was gillyweed. I expected you to ask everyone and anyone you could for help. Longbottom would have told you in an instant. But you did not. You did not. You have a streak of pride and independence that might have ruined all. So what could I do? Feed you information from another innocent source. You told me at the Yule Ball, a house elf called Dobby had given you a Christmas present. I called the elf to the staff room to collect some robes for the cleaning. I staged a loud conversation with Professor McGonagall about the hostages we'd been taking and whether Potter would think to use gillyweed. And your little elf friend ran straight to Snape's office and then hurried to find you. Moody's wand was still pointed directly at Harry's heart. Over his shoulder, foggy shapes were moving in the faux glass on the wall. You were so long in that lake, Potter. I thought you had drowned. But luckily, Dumbledore took your idiocy for nobility and marked you high for it. I breathed again. You had an easier time of it than you should have in that maze tonight, of course, said Moody. I was patrolling all around it, able to see through the outer hedges, able to curse many obstacles out of the way. I stunned Fleur de Lacour as she passed. I put the Imperious Curse on Crumb so he would finish Diggory and leave your path to the cup clear. Harry stared at Moody. He just didn't see how this could be. Dumbledore's friend, the famous Auror, the one who had caught so many Death Eaters. It made no sense. No sense at all. The foggy shapes in the faux glass were sharpening and become more distinct. Harry could see the outlines of three people over Moody's shoulder, moving closer and closer, but Moody wasn't watching them. His magical eye was upon Harry. The Dark Lord didn't manage to kill you, Potter, and so he so wanted to, whispered Moody. Imagine how he will reward me when he finds what I have done for him. I gave you to him, the thing he needed above all to regenerate, and then I killed you for him. I'll be honored beyond all other Death Eaters. I'll be his dearest, his closest supporter, closer than a son. Moody's normal eye was bulging, his magical eye fixed upon Harry. The door was barred, and Harry knew he would never reach his own wand in time. The Dark Lord and I, said Moody, and he looked completely insane now, towering over Harry and leering down at him, have much in common. Both of us, for instance, have had very disappointing fathers, very disappointing indeed, and both of us suffer the indignity, Harry, of being named after those fathers. And both of us have had the pleasure, the very great pleasure, of killing our fathers to ensure the continued rise of the Dark Order. You're mad, Harry said. He couldn't stop himself. You're mad. Mad am I, said Moody, his voice rising uncontrollably. We'll see who's mad now that the Dark Lord has returned. Watch it with me at his side. He is back, Harry Potter. You did not conquer him, and now I conquer you. Moody raised his wand He opened his mouth. Harry plunged his own hand into his robes. Stupefy! There was a blinding flash of light. With a great splintering and crashing, the door of Moody's office was blasted apart. Moody was thrown backward onto the office floor. Harry, still staring at the place where Moody's face had been, saw Albus Dumbledore, Professor Snape, and Professor McGonagall looking back at him out of the faux glass. He looked around and saw the three of them standing in the doorway, Dumbledore in front, his wand outstretched. At that moment, Harry fully understood for the first time why people said Dumbledore was the only wizard Voldemort ever feared. The look upon Dumbledore's face as he stared down at the unconscious form of Mad-Eye Moody was more terrible than Harry could have imagined. There was no benign smile upon Dumbledore's face, no twinkle in the eye behind the spectacles. There was cold fury in every line of the ancient face. A sense of power radiated from Dumbledore as though he were giving off burning heat. He stepped into the office, placed a foot underneath Moody's unconscious body, and kicked him over onto his back so that his face was visible. Snape followed him, looking into the faux glass, where his own face was still visible, glaring into the room. Professor McGonagall went straight to Harry. "Come along, Potter," she whispered. The thin line of her mouth was twitching, as though she were about to cry. "Come along, hospital wing." "No," said Dumbledore sharply. "Dumbledore, he ought to. Look at him. He's been through enough tonight." "He will stay, Minerva, because he needs to understand," said Dumbledore curtly. "Understanding is the first step to acceptance, and only with acceptance can there be recovery. He needs to know who put him through the ordeal he has suffered tonight, and why." "Moody," said Harry. He was still in a state of complete disbelief. "How could it have been Moody?" "This is not Alistair Moody," said Dumbledore quietly. "You have never known Alistair Moody. The real Moody would not have removed you from my sight after what had happened tonight. The moment he took you, I knew, and I followed." Dumbledore bent down over Moody's limp form and put a hand inside his robes. He pulled out Moody's hip flask and a set of keys on a ring. Then he turned to Professor McGonagall and Snape. "Severus, please fetch me the strongest truth potion you possess. Then go down to the kitchens and bring up the house elf called Winky. Minerva, kindly go down to Hagrid's house, where you find a large black dog sitting in a pumpkin patch. Take the dog up to my office and tell him I will be with him shortly, and then come back here." If either Snape or McGonagall found these instructions peculiar, they hid their confusion. Both turned at once and left the office. Dumbledore walked over to the trunk with seven locks, fitted the first key in the lock, and opened it. It contained a mass of spellbooks. Dumbledore closed the trunk, placed the second key in the second lock, and opened the trunk again. The spellbooks had vanished. This time it contained an assortment of broken sneakoscopes, some parchment and quills, and what looked like a silvery invisibility cloak. Dumbledore watched, astounded, as Dumbledore placed the third, fourth, fifth, sixth keys in their respective locks, reopening the trunk each time, revealing different contents each time. Then he placed the seventh key in the lock, threw open the lid, and Harry let out a cry of amazement. He was looking down in a kind of pit, an underground room, and lying on the floor some 10 feet below, apparently fast asleep. Thin and starved in appearance was the real Mad-Eye Moody. His wooden leg was gone. The socket that should have held the magical eye looked empty beneath its lid, and chunks of grizzled hair were missing. Harry stared, thunderstruck, between the sleeping Moody in the trunk and the unconscious Moody lying on the floor of the office. Dumbledore climbed into the trunk, lowered himself, and fell lightly onto the floor beside the sleeping Moody. He bent over him. "Stunned, controlled by the Imperius curse, very weak," he said. "Of course, they would have needed to keep him alive. Harry, throw down the impostor's cloak. He's freezing. Madame Pomfrey will see to him, but he seems in no immediate danger." Harry did as he was told. Dumbledore covered Moody in the cloak, tucked it around him, and clambered out of the trunk again. Then he picked up the hip flask that stood upon the desk, unscrewed it, and turned it over. A thick, glutinous liquid splattered onto the office floor. Polyjuice potion, Harry, said Dumbledore. You see the simplicity of it and the brilliance. For Moody never does drink except from his hip flask. He's well known for it. The impostor needed, of course, to keep the real Mad-Eye Moody close by, so that he could continue to make the potion. You see his hair. Dumbledore looked down at Moody in the trunk. The impostor has been cutting it off all year. See where it is uneven? But I think, in the excitement of tonight, our fake Moody might have forgotten to take it as frequently as he should have done, on the hour every hour. We shall see. Dumbledore pulled out the chair at the desk and sat upon it, his eyes fixed on the unconscious Moody on the floor. Harry stared at him, too. Minutes passed in silence. And I think we'll stop there, Boo. You may have fallen asleep, but that's okay. I'll say goodnight to you on the recording first. I love you very much. You're a very sweet kitty. I hope you have a good night.